Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, and welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. This is Shane Vanderhart, and I got Brian Myers in studio, as well as Ron, because we always need more Ron.
Indeed.
Keep the wheels on the bus, baby.
Yeah, less Ron is very boring, so we always need more Ron. You're ready for spring, Brian?
Yeah, I've had it with this weather. I was last week talking about how beautiful the weather was, and now I'm freezing my tootsies off, and I'm ready for spring. So hey, the holidays are behind us. Let's move on.
Okay. Yeah, so Christmas. Okay, come on, March. Let's start.
10 weeks till spring. It's not that far away.
Yes. You just need the...
Make it 10 days, will you?
Yeah, okay. Toughen up a little bit, Brian. Come on, it's not
be
that
such
cold.
A weenie. Hey, speaking of toughening up, I understand you're a fan of movie musicals.
Yeah, I had a tweet in a Facebook post that I said basically I discovered that shopping at Walmart has always been, I think, the ninth circle of hell. If you've read Dante's Inferno,
you do realize you're speaking across the studio here from a guy who's an employee.
Well,
I'm just saying
it has nothing to do with you, Ron, or maybe it does. We'll see.
It might.
But watching, being inundated with movie musicals, yeah. I hate movie musicals, and now that they're streaming in and they can watch them for free.
So what all, like, have you been watching lately?
I don't watch a thing.
What all has been playing in the Vanderhart house?
Let's, I don't even know. Way. I don't even care to ask. I just they're singing. And
how about Robert Goulet and Brigadoon?
I have no idea.
I
walk into the other room. I just like, no, this is
what
no,
a day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in.
And he is too.
Remember
folks.
That?
it doesn't matter what's on. It just, I can tolerate musicals live. Movie musicals, I just can't stand.
What about Paint Your Wagon? That was pretty good.
I haven't seen that one, but it wouldn't matter.
Oh, okay.
I just don't like them. Anyway, now I'm starting to feel uncomfortable thinking about them. I just need to. We need to move on. We
have people in the studio,
and they're
today.
Starting to feel uncomfortable too. I'm sure. Yeah, yes.
See, Eric's moving towards the door.
I'm sorry, I haven't been listening. What were you saying?
So we have we normally don't have studio guests, but it's nice, and it's nice to have a couple of people in here with us. Eric Goranson, he's been on our show before,
friend of the show,
Iowa Association of Christian Schools, and he's joined with by Lydia Quick of Ankeny Christian Academy. So we wanted to have a discussion about Christian education and school choice.
You got to welcome them to the show.
Yes, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. And just, I want to ask you, Lydia, start off with you.
Yes.
Tell us about your involvement with Ankeny Christian Academy and why you chose to go, you know, to do Christian education for your family.
Sure. Well, that's an easy one. I grew up in a Christian school. I grew up on the East Coast, went to a Christian school my entire life, kindergarten through 12th grade, and then on to a Christian college. And so I've always had a great love and passion for Christian education just because of my own experience. You know, I credit where I'm at today because of the people that invested their time and their life into mine. And not for a lot of money. You know, I mean, no one's in education to make money, right? But if you're
right.
at a Christian school,
you're
definitely not. You're there because it's a ministry. And so I don't know if I fully appreciated that until even I was, you know, a young adult, married for a while. But looking back, the decisions I made and where I'm at today, the direction of my life, my relationship with Christ, just all of that just has given me the passion for Christian education.
So how many kids do you have?
We have three.
And they're all at Ankeny Christian Academy?
They are all at Ankeny Christian Academy.
So, yes. What ages?
I have a sixth grader, middle school. My oldest is, so we're entering into that phase, middle school girl. That's That's interesting.
Yes, having two, one now is an adult, and, okay. and another is a high school student. I've been through that.
Good. And just, you can pass me some tips then before we leave today, because we're all new to this. So, okay. My middle child is a fifth grader. He's our son, Dylan, and then Sydney is our caboose. She's in second grade, so she's my free spirit, fun-loving, loves school, loves life, loves everything, loves musicals, Trolls. Yes, Trolls is a great musical. We listen to that soundtrack 24/7.
So. Oh, God bless you. I don't know how I made it through kids' movies growing up. Anyway, that could go. That's a whole different discussion.
I don't know how you made it, period. I've got to
talk
to your...
My wife probably would agree with you there.
I've got to talk to your father about that. Speaking of which, Dan is out of the hospital and Dan is doing well, correct?
Yes. My dad had, actually they ruled out a heart attack. They thought this happened after we actually recorded last week. He went in the hospital with chest pains, and they're still not. He's had a couple heart attacks before, but ruled out. They don't know exactly what caused the pain, but it wasn't a heart attack. So,
well, praise the Lord for that. Sorry to derail the
conversation
here, but I did want to think about that real quickly. And
yeah, so, okay, so basically, you know, you chose Christian education, but there's a lot of families who just, they don't feel like they can afford it. They just don't think that's something that they can do. They feel trapped in the public school system.
Absolutely. We felt that way as a family, too. I mean, my husband was very nervous about making that plunge. You know, middle-class family just working hard and not, you know, extra money to spend on something like that. So that definitely was something that, a hurdle that we had to get over. What was unique about my situation is that I took a job at Ankeny Christian Academy.
Okay.
And so that kind of sped up the process for us, you know, and kind of helped in that area. But, you know, I would just say that where there's a will, there's a way, but it is still a sacrifice.
Right. I think part of the reason I think parents maybe have a hard time pulling that trigger is we're so ingrained to think that, you know, school education is not our job. You know, it's something that the state has to do. We just, you know, we abdicate our role. And I as a youth pastor, when you were talking about how you don't get in Christian education to make money. It just reminded me, when I was youth pastor, actually then became a dean of students at a Christian school in Valparaiso, Indiana. I actually took a pay cut from being a youth pastor. So I know that's true. You do not get into Christian education.
That's a sad commentary.
To make money. But anyway, we've lost that. You know, we've a lot of ways of abdicated responsibility. I always told parents, like, whether you need to realize that, first and foremost, it is your job to make sure your child has the education he or she needs, whether that's public education, Christian education, homeschooling. My wife and I homeschool. Mm-hmm. But you need to make sure you're involved and that you're the leader in that education. And
here's the thing, whether it's homeschooling or private schooling, either way, it's a huge commitment. It's a different huge commitment.
It is,
but it's
yes.
a huge commitment either way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One is much more financial than the other. The other one involves a heck of a lot more terms of time.
It's sacrifice either way. You're sacrificing, right. Well, you're sacrificing money. Either you're just not making it because you're homeschooling, right. or you're having to give it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, you made the choice to homeschool, to go to Christian school. But a lot of parents are like, just can't. I feel trapped. So this gets us to school choice,
right.
Which is why we're really in here today. We want to talk about what school choice options we have in Iowa, what we're looking forward to in the future. What's been your experience with folks in Ankeny getting people? I guess before we started recording the show, you talked about even people in Ankeny, because we think Ankeny, they're a little more affluent. Everybody can afford, you know, private school in Ankeny, right?
No, not true.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I think it just goes back to the hardworking families just not having that extra money to do something extra, like Christian education,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the cost of healthcare, which is a whole other radio show, and that kind of, those kind of things that we're all facing now.
Right.
Private school is just something that I think doesn't even enter people's conversation because they don't they can't see spending that kind of money every single year. But I go back to your children are your greatest investment. And this is what my husband tells people. He was the one that was so trepidatious at the beginning of this whole journey.
Right.
I don't know, you know, but he's the one now that will speak up first and say, you can't not do it. If this is something that you feel led to do as a family, you want that education for your child, whether it's smaller class sizes, the undergirding of your faith in the classroom, biblical worldview in every subject.
Yes.
You can't not do it. You only get a small window with your children. And so, as far as making sacrifices and things like, we do that as a family, you
right.
know, I'm a proud driver of a Dodge Caravan, you know,
okay.
That's okay. So, you know, it can be done, but it's a struggle. And we do, I think most of the Christian schools in the area, the school choice STO funds are there. And then we do fundraise above and beyond to help families, but that money does run out. And
hey, so, Eric, could you explain the school tuition organizations real quick for our listeners who may not be aware?
Yeah, so currently we have two school choice programs in the state. One is a very small tax credit that public and private school families take advantage of, and that's the tuition, or I'm sorry, it's the textbook and tuition tax credit.
Uh-huh.
But it's just it's a couple $100 off your taxes, and frankly, I think the latest number I heard is about 70%+ of those dollars go to public school parents for like athletic fees and prom dresses, whatever, I don't know. The other one is, and we appreciate that, but it's not the kind of dollar amount that makes a real difference on what you choose to do with your children.
Right.
The second one is more substantial, and that is for students whose families are at 300% of poverty or lower, so very lower middle income down through the lowest income families, you can qualify for a scholarship that's paid for by private donations.
Yeah.
And then in exchange for those private donations, the state gives those donors a tax credit. That's I think what Lydia's getting at is, though, is that that takes care of the lowest income families.
Right.
But if you're making 301% of poverty with a family of four or five,
right,
and you're looking at tuition for four or five children or even two children, you're looking now at some serious sacrificing. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife and I have two children in a private school in town. We don't qualify for the STO. But that also means that I drive a truck that's literally falling apart and I live in the same home that we bought 18 years ago that's too small for us, and that's okay. But when the state says we will have a fund for the education of Iowa children and it doesn't distinguish between public or any other kind of education,
right,
and I'm making sacrifices and my neighbors don't have to because I have made a choice for my kids because my kids need that choice,
right?
There's got to be a better way. So the STOs are very, very helpful for the low-income families, but we've got to figure out how to handle, how to treat those middle-income families and let them have the same choices that those who are wealthy enough to choose have and those who are lower income and can get a scholarship have.
Okay, so what are the options here?
I think the options are either vouchers or education savings accounts.
Okay, and for just assume that, you know, I know the difference between the two, but for our listeners who may not understand,
yeah,
what's the difference between a voucher and an
education savings
account?
We're going to make this quick because we're...
Yeah, why don't I just define the two, and then if you want to talk about other things, we can after
sure.
that. But the fundamental difference between a voucher and an education savings account is that vouchers are the state saying you decide which of these prescribed types of education, usually private schools, that you want to go to, and we'll write them a check. So it's very prescriptive.
Yep.
Education savings account says, here's a portion of what we would have spent on your child. Go shop for education and make that education work for you.
And I love that concept because that empowers parents even more. It allows maximum flexibility. So what are we looking at in the state as far as making that a reality?
Well, we've decided as a school choice coalition, and that's a number of organizations working together, including ours, which is the Iowa Association of Christian Schools. And Lydia's on our board for the Iowa Association of Christian Schools, too. We've decided as a coalition to go after the ESA, the Education Savings Account option. We've been talking about it for a number of years at the Capitol. We look at this session, and we're cautiously optimistic that we could see some action on that this year.
Okay. So basically, what would that look like here in Iowa if you got the perfect plan passed?
Basically, you'd get the average state aid per pupil. So there's state general fund funding of public education based on your kid showing up at a public school. plus there's other state funds, and there's some federal funds, and then there's property taxes, and there's sales taxes. So
right.
There's a lot of different sources of income for your local public school.
Mm-hmm.
There's just one of those is the state aid. And right now that would, on an average around this, is different for every district, but the average would be about $5,099 to $6,000, depending on which formula we use. And so you would get that for each child that you say will not be in a public school next year, and you'd be able to go take that. It's kind of like a flexible spending account or an HSA, except instead of you and your employer putting money into it, it's just the state putting their portion that they would have spent on your kid into
right.
that fund. You get a debit card or a checkbook. You go shop for education, homeschooling, private schooling, virtual schooling, tutoring, cognitive skills training, educational therapies, whatever it is that your child needs from an educational standpoint, go shop for that. Go make it work for you.
Great. We got a minute left, so I just want to ask, what can our listeners do to help, you know, kind of push this, you know, the agenda forward as far as making sure that legislators pass education savings accounts this year?
Well, those of you who are listening, I'd really encourage you to go to at least iowachristianschools.org and sign up for our email list,
okay.
iowachristianschools.org. And then also there's a website called unitedforstudents.com, and that's more of a coalition-wide thing. And so
right.
if you sign up there, you're going to be on the coalition as a whole's email list.
Okay.
If you go to iowachristianschools.org, you're going to be on the email list for Christian schools. And we don't send out a lot of emails, but when we do, it's filled with information, and it's often calling you to action on something that's real tangible and we'd love your help with.
Great. Thank you so much, Eric and Lydia, for coming
thanks,
on Captain
guys.
Thoughts Radio. Again, yeah, sign up, iowachristianschools.org. Get those emails. They'll include action alerts so you can contact your legislators and say, hey, we need school choice here in Iowa. This is Captain Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So on the line, we have a very special guest, Dr. Lee Heeb. She's been, I think this is her third or fourth time on our show.
She's a friend of the show.
She's a friend of the show. She spoke at the Caffeinated Thoughts briefing. She's a former Libertarian candidate for governor. And a former president of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, orthopedic surgeon, and I think you were also in the you were a naval surgeon, correct?
For a while.
Yeah, you got a long bio, which none of which I wrote down until right before the show.
Well, welcome to the show, Lee Heeb.
Thank you.
Well, we wanted to talk to you about Obamacare because now that we have a president-elect, I'm still having a hard time saying President Trump. Are you, Lee?
You'll get used to it.
Oh, not at all.
Not at all? Okay.
That's a lot easier to say than President Clinton.
That's true.
A lot easier.
So,
she seems to feel more or less the same way that we do.
So, well, President Trump will have a Republican Senate or Republican House, and with a bunch of people who are saying, hey, we're going to get rid of Obamacare.
I guess here's the first thing I'm going to say. And you brought up I was a naval surgeon. I was also, I mean, makes me a naval officer. And I took an oath to defend and support the Constitution, as do all of these guys. And then they violate it. Well, the first thing to say here is that, you know, Obamacare, I always tell people, it's just Medicare on steroids. And both of them are equally unconstitutional. So when I hear Steve King or Grassley or any of my Republican guys out there saying, we're going to repeal and replace, it just grates on me, because technically, you know, that's why they don't get a lot of, you know, support maybe from the libertarian side of the House, is because it just looks like one corrupt plan changing another. What the real issue here is, if we want to make America great again, make America medicine great again, what we have to do is go back to things that actually work. And so what that involves then, I mean, this whole problem did not start with Obamacare. It just that just speeded up our problems. It started with the Medicare Authorization Act of 1964.
Exactly.
So what we have to look at is, how can we do this constitutionally and unwind the problem that we're in, which is government medicine. Government medicine fails everywhere it's been applied to the degree it's been applied. Now, before we didn't the problems, and people say, oh, well, we can't go back to those days, and we have all these problems, we can't afford it, blah, 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 blah. But keep in mind, those problems didn't occur before 1964. It, all the things, privacy and cost and all the stuff that we're talking about, really came about as a result of government getting involved in this, just like they would if the government got involved in legislating how we're going to sell tomatoes. And thank God they don't have our food supply in their hands.
Yet.
Now, So, and if anybody wants to look into this, I wrote an article, and I talked about this on the John Stossel show years ago. It's called The Three C's Access to Care, The Three C's. What we need to end up with is a system that works. And the system that worked before, that kept costs down, that encouraged free market competition, that built the greatest medical care in the world prior to 1964, was a combination of cash, catastrophic insurance, and charity. You know, the thing about cash is, people say, oh, we can't afford to pay cash. Well, before 1964, a blue-collar worker could pay cash for an appendectomy. It was, it was a few days of his wages. Now no one can pay cash for an appendectomy. A fairly simple
unless you're
procedure.
Unless you're, you know, independently wealthy.
Right, and everybody, except you. And, what's happened is, in every other branch of the world, you know, as technology improves, generally the costs should come down. We are the only people that claim this is a problem of technology. No, this is a problem of massive overregulation.
Yeah.
So what we do is we take that away by charging cash for outpatient items. And outpatient items being things such as going to your doctor to have your fungus toenails treated, to getting your, checkup, to get, treating a cold, to getting an MRI. You know, I have a friend that owns an MRI center. And if you look at MRIs today, if you go through the Medicare and the insurance system, an MRI of the knee might cost $2,000, okay? You see a bill for $2,000, but when it all washes out, most of that is funneled off in a bureaucracy, and what the MRI center actually receives is what is about $400, and that actually goes towards the production of that MRI. And if you look at that, that's what you would pay cash for an MRI down in Mexico. So if you want to know what the real cost of goods and services are, you have to go to a cash economy. We've completely lost that. So the first thing we do is we have to go to cash as outpatient.
Well, a lot of people, because of the, running things through insurance, are absolutely oblivious as to what they're actually being billed for, right?
Right. And that's the other issue is, what we have now is not real insurance, and Obamacare has made this worse. Real insurance is like your house insurance. You pay cash when you have one shingle off. You reach into your own pocket, not your neighbor's. You pay cash. And you put it back up. But you have insurance for those times when you have a catastrophic failure. The wind blows your roof off and you need insurance. That's what real insurance is.
Right.
Real insurance is not that expensive. Okay. What we are paying for is prepaid health care, which does not work. In fact, Obamacare has tripled down on that. So now under Obamacare, you don't have to buy that insurance until your roof blows off. Now think about how that would work for homes. If you didn't have to buy home insurance until your house was on fire, it would be absolutely unaffordable.
The
third part of this is, people fall through the cracks in every system, and we can no longer afford to even give charity because it's illegal in some. You know, it's illegal for me to give charity care without charging people because that would violate the Medicare laws. So this whole thing has gotten crazy.
Okay.
Now, it is true when I hear them say replace, it is true we can't go from what we have now to the back to the free market solution that worked and that built this great system.
But too much of a shock, yeah.
I like Tom Price, who's Trump's, I think, designee for HHS, Health and Human Services.
Right.
Tom Price is an HSA guy, health savings account. So here's what you do. At some point, all the people on, you know, private employer-based insurance have to be told that within 3 years, there's not going to be any employer-based insurance. You are going to have to buy your health insurance. And let me tell you something that I've learned. Private health insurance bought by an individual can be had cheaper than group health insurance through a company. People are getting hosed on this thing. So you have to get rid of employer-based health insurance as part of the problem. You have to go back to you getting the money in your checkbook from your employer. Your actual payroll goes up. You get paid more, and then you take it out and buy cost-effective insurance that's catered to you. You don't have to buy pregnancy coverage if you're 60 years old, for example. So, you know, you get better insurance. And this includes government workers. You cannot have the government workers get government health insurance for free when the private sector has to buy. And that's one of our problems, is this two-tiered system is you're the protected class, you get special bennies, you know.
Yeah.
So everybody that's in the working world buys insurance. The second part of this is, how do we deal with the people who are on, you know, government insurance? Because right now, let's face it, 75% of healthcare is given as charity. We can't afford to do that. Look at MD Anderson just laid off 10,000 workers. This is a big cancer center.
That is, yeah.
That doesn't help people that have cancer. That's because they cannot afford to stay in business. That's why I'm no longer practicing much. I do some orthopedics, but that's on my side. You know, I'm going to a cash pay tattooffomaha.com. I take off tattoos with the latest state-of-the-art laser. That's my new cash business because people cannot afford to stay in their in primary, you know, their primary specialties now. It's just not paying. So we've got to get that. Anything that disenfranchises hospitals and doctors is not going to be good for people.
You're listening.
So we have to reverse this. So what you have to do for the Medicare people is you're going to have to, or Medicaid, let's start with Medicaid.
Hey,
or Medicare.
Lee,
Hang on, Lee.
Hang on a sec. I know Brian has a follow-up question. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Dr. Lee Heeb. Brian, go ahead with your question.
Well, yeah, and I don't mean to cut you off here, Lee, because I know you're still in the middle of making your case. But a couple of questions that arise from what you've been describing, though, is first of all, Medicare and Medicaid, you know, for better or for worse, they're still going to be with us. I mean,
what I'm just getting to.
Okay.
How to get rid of that.
All right. Well, get to that in just a second.
We're not going to solve this unless we get rid of them. Because the average, I think I read somewhere, so Medicare has to be unwound. I don't want to hear the Republicans saying replace. I want to hear them say, you know, repeal Obamacare and then unwind the system. And here's how you do it. Basically, you tell people that are already on Medicare, you're eating them. You're going to have to take care of them. And see, we take care of them for less than the cost it gives to do the services in a lot of cases. That is why MD Anderson's laying off people. That's why I'm not in practice. That's why I'm not in Arizona. That's why things are happening. So you can't keep everybody. You can't have a new crop of those people show up. So what you have to do is on an age-related basis, you have to give a transition period, and then you have to tell people, say, under the age of 45, you're not going to have Medicare. But you have, you know, 20 years now to be on private insurance. So by the time you come to that age of 65, you have a private base of insurance. You don't have to worry about it. You're already covered. And then the third issue is, what do you do with the people on Medicaid, the indigent, okay? Well, what Tom Price, I believe, is going to do, I think this is his plan. He's going to say, let's just give everybody on Medicaid an HSA plan. They have catastrophic health insurance for big ticket items that backs up, and we put $5,000 into an HSA plan that sits in there growing tax deferred, and they can use that money towards their outpatient and towards whatever care they need that doesn't fall in their insurance plan. And you know, that may sound expensive, but I think we're paying over $40,000 per person in Medicaid in the state of Iowa alone.
Wow.
I mean, that's more than I pay for insurance, but it's a very inefficient system, and that is the point. So you're going to have to wind all this stuff back, and that's the way you do it. And then at the end of time, you don't have a Medicare and Medicaid. You don't have this huge entitlement. Because let's face it, guys, America's broke, and it's not like we can just keep going on forever. This is bad for patients, it's bad for physicians and hospitals, and it's bad for our society's bankroll. So we have a choice of being Venezuela, where we keep these things going and inflate the dollar, or we have Iceland, where we unwind ourselves from these things, let the banks fail that are going bankrupt, let the system correct itself and get rid of things that are totally ineffective. And the last point I'll make is, if you know who Taichi Ono is, he's the guy who described Muda. Muda is the Japanese Toyota concept of inefficiency in production. And he has seven fallacies, that seven areas where industry looks at these, and this is how they lose money on production. And we in medicine, I looked at this and I put it in the medicine context, we fail on every one of them. You know, every one. We are inefficient as they describe it. They would not accept this in building car industry procedures, and yet we accept it now in this, you know, double down Obamacare nightmare that we have right now.
Well, Leah, I'm concerned that I mean, it's not that I don't agree with you, but I'm very concerned that this politically just simply is a non-starter. I mean, look at every time we talk about Social Security, which I think we need to do something similar there, where we start to wean people off of it right. over a generation or two. That's financially the only thing that I think that's gonna work. However, that's just politically, like I say, it's a non-starter.
Well, we're talking about raising the, you know, age.
Well, it may be a non-starter, but so is living like Venezuela. And I think people around the world, I don't think you give people enough credit. You know, you and I understand this. Don't think the plumber down the street doesn't understand this. When Obamacare first came in, one of the executive director at AAPS talks about one of her patients came in. He was literally a plumber down the street, and he came in with a paginated notebook of the Obamacare bill when it was first available to be read, and notes and underlines, and he wanted to talk to her about it. I mean, you know, I think the reason that Trump won is that there are a whole bunch of people, myself included, that said we can't go on the way it is, and we need an exit strategy from socialism and globalism, and this is part of it. So I wouldn't sell the American public short.
Great.
I think it's because they have to understand it's a choice, and I think if anybody can sell this, it's Donald Trump. It's a choice between Iceland and Venezuela financially. You're either going to have to start hoarding toilet paper because everything's going to be too expensive.
Dr. Heap, thank you so much. We're almost out of time.
Thanks, Lee.
I hope you're right. I hope we start making moves towards that free market system. We absolutely need it. Thank you, Dr. Heap, for coming on Caffeine with Thoughts Radio.
I hope so.
Hey, everybody, stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org.
And now it's time for our news segment, otherwise known affectionately as
News You Can Use.
First up, this is from WordFence, and we'll let Shane tell you here in a moment about WordFence, who those folks are. But this is more on the Russian hacking. On Friday, WordFence published an analysis of the FBI and DHS Grizzly Step report. The report was widely seen as proof that Russian intelligence operatives hacked the U.S. 2016 election. WordFence showed that the PHP malware in the report is old and freely available from a Ukrainian hacker group and is an administrative tool for hackers. WordFence also performed an analysis on the IP addresses included in the report and showed that they originate from 61 countries and 389 different organizations with no clear attribution to Russia.
Well, who's WordFence? Well, WordFence is the company that exists solely to protect your website from hackers.
Yeah, we use them on our websites, yours and mine both.
Yep, to protect, you know, try to keep our websites from being hacked, because believe it or not, you wouldn't realize how often we do get targeted.
Big time.
So, they do a pretty good job.
Well, and that's interesting too, because I don't know about Caffeinated Thoughts, but I know that the two websites that I have with WordPress, maybe
WordFence.
With WordPress.
Press. Okay.
We're getting just attacked. I can't tell you how many times per day from somebody in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
We're getting clobbered.
Ukrainians. They're a hacker. A lot of hackers originate from Ukraine.
Yeah, and I thought it was really odd that they would want to try to go to Myers & Associates or what have you. I mean, it seemed like an odd thing to try to hack, but we were getting inundated with attempts. But anyway, this gets really interesting because the soon-to-be Trump administration, particularly the president-elect, has been going back and forth with the United States intelligence community with regard to whether or not the Russians really did this. Now, the intelligence agencies, and there's four of them, they're all apparently saying that, yes, indeed, it was the Russians. Now, there's a couple of questions that arise from that. First of all, that doesn't seem to fit at all with what the experts at WordFence are saying.
Right.
But the other thing, and we discussed this at length here in, last week's show or the week before, you have to define what it means to hack somebody. I think the more media attention this gets, the more likely it is that uninformed voters are going to think what happened here is that the Russians somehow or other managed to get into a multitude of computers nationally on election day and skewed the results, which, of course, that's not what happened here at all. A hack doesn't necessarily mean that at all. I think the most important question with respect to the hack was whether the Russians were behind the hack that ended up producing all of those emails from John Podesta's server,
right,
and also Mrs. Clinton's server. I mean, those are the things that I think we need to be concentrating on.
Yeah, and to be honest, I have not read the report, so I'm assuming I would hope that they have additional evidence beyond the IP addresses, because if they're just going off of IP addresses, that's, not good.
It's not enough.
Yeah, it's not enough.
Yeah. And again, I'm not here to say that the intelligence agencies are incorrect. I'm just saying this is rather fascinating to watch. And again, I'm afraid that all of the media attention is giving an entirely different perception to the American people than really what happened.
Right.
Anyway. All right. Next up, this is from WLS in Chicago. It's about that dreadful, I don't know if you've seen the video or not, but there's a dreadful hate crime that occurred there about a week ago. Four people were charged Thursday in connection with the brutal torture of an 18-year-old man with special needs that was streamed live on Facebook. Each were charged with aggravated kidnapping, hate crime, aggravated unlawful restraint, aggravated battery and with a deadly weapon, and residential burglary, according to the Cook County State's attorney. One person was also charged with robbery and possession of a stolen motor vehicle. In a press conference Thursday afternoon, Chicago police detectives laid out the timeline of the events that led up to the man being tied up, kicked, beaten, yelled at, slashed, and forced to drink toilet water, all of which was streamed live on Facebook. And if you haven't seen this video, there's a young white man that's the victim here, and there are four black youths that are perpetrating this crime. And these foolish kids, I think they streamed this on Facebook,
which
is just insanity.
Right. I
But I have to speculate here that had they not done that, this crime would never have gotten any media attention.
Probably not.
And the sick thing was, right after this video came to light, people were still reluctant in the beginning to call it a hate crime. Eventually, they came around. But initially, from the White House to, I think, also political pundits, and maybe even the police, the local police in Chicago, were all reluctant to call it a hate crime. And I was just stunned.
Yeah, and it's not that we favor hate crime legislation. I don't.
We favor equity. Equal treatment.
Absolutely. And, because I think we could do away with hate crime, because murder is still murder. It doesn't matter, you know,
that's right.
whether somebody did because they hated the person or because they were trying to eliminate a witness. It's still the person's just as dead as they were before.
That's right. Next up, we've got... some good news from the Alabama Supreme Court. This is from LifeSite. A unanimous opinion handed down the last day of 2016 by the Alabama Supreme Court is the latest in a growing body of state law extending personhood and the equal protection of the law to preborn children in Alabama. How about that? The personhood of the preborn from the moment of conception has now been recognized by the Supreme Court of Alabama as it relates to the Homicide Act, the Chemical Endangerment Statute, and the Wrongful Death Act. The facts of the case in Stinnett versus Kennedy revolve around the death of a preborn child of Ms. Kimberly Stinnett due to the alleged malpractice of an obstetrician, Dr. Carla Kennedy. The main question faced by the Alabama Supreme Court was whether the Alabama Wrongful Death Act applied to preborn children harmed by medical negligence before viability. And apparently the court said, yeah, it does.
And that's tremendous.
Huge.
So and they're not the only state that there's several states that do this, Illinois being one, surprisingly.
Figure that one.
Which surprised me. The rest are some other states that you would not be necessarily surprised by because they tend to be more conservative.
Next up from Politico, the GOP optics fail with their ethics panel action. Following a public outcry and tweeted criticism from President-elect Donald Trump, House Republicans reversed course Tuesday on a proposal to gut, I think that's an unfortunate expression, to gut their own ethics watchdog. The proposal, which House Republicans approved behind closed doors Monday night, would have defied Trump's drain the swamp mantra, aimed at making Washington more transparent and less cozy. Well, here's the thing about this ethics so-called ethics watchdog panel. It was a non-effective entity in terms of actually policing ethics.
Right.
The Congressional Ethics Panel is still very much alive, but this was sort of a little arm that had no power and was used to leak information as opposed to actually do anything of ethical value. But nonetheless, the optics were terrible and the Republicans were stupid.
Yeah. Go figure. Hey, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Yeah, you do that all the time. These were not the words I expected to hear when I shared with my college roommate that I had hurt someone earlier that day. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. We know we're not perfect, but it is unsettling when someone brings into focus one of our blind spots. Blind spots, like the log in your eye of Matthew 7:3-5, should be dealt with as soon as you find them. I immediately took those biting words to heart, followed up on an example he cited, and purposed from that point on to use my words to heal rather than to hurt. Yes, it was hard to hear those unflattering words from my friend. However, as the scriptures say, faithful are the wounds of a friend. For those types of wounds lead to long-lasting healing. To get help with your blind spot, contact us at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
Hey, do you want to take advantage of the marketing potential within social media for your company or organization, but you're not so sure how? Let me help. My company, 415 Communications, is a social media consulting firm that works with groups like yours. Go to 415communications.com or give me a call at 515-321-5077.
And now we've come to Ron Carlson's favorite part of the show. We're about to share this a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up.
Well, you were Johnny on the spot with that one today, buddy.
Yeah.
This one is from The Truth About Cars, which means it's a dead giveaway that this one came from Ron. I think this is the only site that Ron reads.
Oh, you read caffeinatedthoughts.com, right? Right? Oh!
Did you hear the crickets there?
Never mind.
All right, this is from The Truth About Cars. A disagreement over the price of a fill-up. At a Riviera Beach gas station ended in a stereotypical fashion Wednesday night after the attendant at the gas station repeatedly rammed her own vehicle into the customer's car.
This is not good customer service, by the way.
According to the Palm Beach Post, the accused, Lil Belinda Beckles, let me try that again. Lil Belinda Beckles was arrested.
Nickname, or did her parents actually name her that?
I think that's her whole real name.
Lil Belinda Beckles. Say that about five times.
Ms. Beckles, I'm sorry for that.
She was arrested and charged with 6 counts of aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, that being her car.
Yes.
In this case, it was a loaded Toyota.
What do they mean by loaded?
I don't know.
Okay, anyway.
The customer, Simone Shepherd, had returned to the station to protest being overcharged on a $14 top-off. After Shepherd spoke to the station's manager on Beckles' cell phone, the attendant, that would be Lil Belinda Beckles, the attendant allegedly grew agitated when the customer said she'd have to wait for police to arrive before returning the phone. According to the police report, that made Beckles reach for a tire iron. After smashing Shepherd's passenger side window slapping her, she busted the window out and slapped her. Lil Belinda Beckles gave chase to the customer when she attempted to escape in her vehicle. This customer's getting out of there. It's like, this woman's nuts. I got to get out of here. But the attendant allegedly rammed the customer 10 to 15 times during a pursuit, which responding cops finally put a lid on. Still, the drama wasn't over. The report states that during Lil Belinda Beckles' interrogation, Shepherd walked up to her and slapped her. All this over $14 of gas, folks.
Wow.
What a deal.
It's another day in California.
She said she was overcharged on... So, really, not even $14.
Yeah.
It was $14 top off.
Ah, good point. Good point.
So, we're talking like...
Who knows how much?
I mean...
Yeah.
My goodness. I would just say, you know what? Let me pay for that. I'll
Yeah.
I can't believe.
I'll pay. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Instead, we reach for a tire iron and go on a, you know, I'm assuming a high-speed chase and...
There's so much wrong with this story. For instance, you know, just the customer holding on to the lady's personal cell phone, too. It's like, why?
Really?
I wonder what the point of that was, anyway.
I have no idea.
Until the cops got there. Yeah.
Yeah. You're really calling the police for, you know, being overcharged on $14?
You know, it occurs to me, you just said a few moments ago that there's so much wrong with this story. Well, it seems to me that every week when we read these stupid stories, there's
so much wrong.
There's so many things. Yeah, it's just wrong on multiple levels.
Send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. We'll give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show. Today's blame goes to Ron Carlson.
Thanks, everybody. Hey, we'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.